Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is Christopher McKinley, whose book, Optimal Cupid, tells how he used mathematical and gaming models to go to the internet dating site OkCupid and find the perfect match. We'll be talking to Chris soon. In the news, it was approved by the Nevada Gaming Control Board to use a type of debit cards at slot and video poker machines. This will allow players to download their own money directly from the card to the machine and possibly from the machine back to the debit card. A key element not discussed yet in the announcement is whether this will be free for the players to use. I would much rather carry a debit card around than large amounts of cash, but I'm concerned about fees. Using an ATM in a casino is very expensive. It actually makes a lot of sense for casinos to offer the service for free to players. Handling cash is very expensive, and if the use of these cards becomes widespread, casinos will need fewer employees to provide the same level of service. I'm also concerned about security. In recent weeks, hackers got data on 100,000 credit card customers for Target.
100 million.
No, it couldn't be.
Yeah, over 100 million cards.
Don't believe they have that many. All right. Are there that many adults? There can't be that many adults in Target. Anyway, a whole bunch of credit cards from Target. And they got into the databases of the casinos of the Sands Corporation, including Venetian, Palazzo, Sands Bethlehem, and perhaps those in Asia. Hackers also shut down the primary Bitcoin exchange in Hong Kong. If hackers can get this kind of data, putting a lot of money on a card gives me major pause. Let's say a hacker regularly goes into high-limit rooms and inserts his card, which actually downloads some malware into the card reader. The hacker plays a few hands and then leaves, but the malware still might be on the machine. When a big player inserts his card a bit later and downloads cash onto the machine using his debit card, it's possible the malware can capture enough information so that this hacker now has what he needs to create a duplicate card, including PIN number, and download everything off that account. Could this actually happen? I'm not sure. Am I concerned about it? You bet. Richard, you're not a slot or video poker player. Do you have thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, it already does happen to people with debit cards, but there is a limit as to what your liability is. So just as if someone steals a credit card, you know, it used to be you had a maximum liability of $50. And I think many of the banks have even waived that. So, but, you know, I mean, yeah, I think it's great for most players, but it is, you know, we are headed toward a future that gets rid of cash, which is going to make it tougher and tougher for people to play anonymously, you know, which is going to make it much harder for, you know, Advantage players who try to play anonymously. So they did talk about having prepaid cards. Even then, I don't know if you'll be able to do that anonymously.
Well, likely not. If you're playing slots or video poker, being in their slot club system is largely a necessity if you want to have an advantage. Now, if you're playing table games, not so much. Different subject. Also in the news, the governors of the states of Nevada and Delaware have signed an agreement in principle that will allow interstate online poker playing between these two states. If this ends up as a two-state deal, it's nothing much. If several other states join in, It's the start of a nationwide internet gambling. There's still lots of things to get straightened out before this becomes active, but it's a step in the right direction. Richard?
Exactly. It's a step in the right direction, although I don't understand how it's going to work because Delaware has basically one pool and Nevada has three different pools. World Series of Poker has theirs and Station Casinos have theirs with Ultimate and now a third one from South Point, Real Gaming, I guess it's called.
Yes.
So I don't know how they're going to, divide up the players from Delaware.
Well, it could be that if you want to play at Real Gaming and you are currently within the state of Nevada or within the state of Delaware, you're eligible to play.
Well, but the thing is, right now in Delaware, the casino has their own software that they use for poker.
Right, and you have to be within the state of Delaware to use it. But if they could make that you could be in either state to use it, the ones in Delaware could keep their own software but expand where you could use it, and the ones in Nevada could keep their own software, unless I'm missing something.
Well, I don't know how you could have players using two different softwares playing at the same table.
No, they wouldn't be. It would be a player from Nevada could play in Delaware using the Delaware software. The player from Delaware could play on the Nevada software and just be allowed to play the Nevada game.
Oh, well, that's not as good. That's not as good as if they put the players all in the same pool so they have that many more tables. You understand where basically they're in one pool, no matter where they enter, whether they enter from Delaware or Nevada.
Okay.
But we'll have to see how it turns out, how they make it work.
All right. In Florida, a player who won a World Series of Poker circuit event took a large denomination chip for a souvenir after his win. This was big time against the rules, and his titles and winnings were stripped. He's banned for life from all Caesars properties and events and certain other properties. This was a heavy-handed verdict in light of the recent New Jersey chip scandal where a player inserted large amounts of extra chips into an event. Was this verdict overkill, Richard? After all, he just wanted a souvenir.
I thought it was. I thought it was. I mean, yeah, you have to prevent people from doing that, but boy, to be banned for life and have your they took the money too, right? They took his prize winnings and
he took the money. He's off of the Herndon database.
And, yeah, I thought it was too much.
All right.
What about you? I mean, did you agree with it?
Didn't have a strong feeling about it. I don't actually understand what the big crime is. I think these are special chips for this event. But he took one. It would be one thing if he took 200 of them and he planned to put it into another tournament somewhere. Well, yeah, and that has to be stopped. But one chip,
yeah.
It's likely not to be used again as a souvenir. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. But apparently on the 2+2 site, at least half the active poker players on that site thought it was the appropriate punishment. So, oh well. Let's talk to our guest. Christopher McKinley is an applied mathematician and former blackjack player. Seeking the right kind of female companionship, he figured out a way to reverse engineer the OkCupid dating site. He went on 88 dates in 3 months. The 88th date was his current fiance. He has written a small book about how to work the system called Optimal Cupid, Mastering the Hidden Logic of OkCupid. Christopher McKinley, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks for having me on.
Glad you're here. Now, Richard Munchkin is married, and I'm engaged to be married. Hopefully neither one of us will ever have occasion to use an internet dating site. Before coming across your story, I'd never heard of OkCupid. How does that site differ from some of the larger, well-advertised sites such as eHarmony or Match.com?
Well, OkCupid is actually very large. It might well be larger than eHarmony. And Match.com just bought it. So I think maybe that gives you an idea of how big it is. I mean, it's one of the largest dating sites in the world. The material way in which it differs, I think, is it's a much more hands-off.
It's also free, right?
Yeah, it's also free. That's quite notable. The demographic is different. It's mostly younger, but that's, I think that the demographics on all these sites are starting to blur together. Yeah, I think you're right. The two main ways in which it differs are, A, it's free, and B, they're very open about how the matching is performed. It's all in their FAQ.
No. So the foreword of your book is written by John Finkel. And for our listeners, I just want to say John Finkel is the subject of a really good book that I would highly recommend called Johnny Magic and the Card Shark Kids, How a Gang of Geeks Beat the Odds and Stormed Las Vegas. And he had his own OkCupid story. So I'm wondering if you would tell us about that.
John's got a lot of funny dating stories. Which one are you referring to?
Oh, I'm referring to the article that was written to him, written about the girl who met him on OkCupid and went on a date with him.
The Gawker article?
This was an article about her finding out that he was the magic champion.
Yeah, I don't actually recall how they met, but she was a... you know, one of these, like, parasitic bloggers for a small blog, you know, so basically just trying to write something to get clicks, you know. So a lot of the blog posts on little blogs like Gawker are clickbait, you know. They'll say they'll take any position on anything in order to sell ads. And so she, you know, met John in a strictly social context, he didn't happen to mention the fact that he was the former Magic World Champion on the first date, probably because he didn't really feel the need to blow his horn or think it was anything to hide. I'm sure they just, you know, talk about other stuff. I don't tell everyone I go on a first date with everything about my life either. So I think she found out about it. Maybe she Googled him afterward and found out about it and then decided that was, you know, clickbait worthy enough to, like, try and, write some kind of smear in Gawker, and it didn't go over very well, as you can tell from the reaction.
Yeah, well, what it reminded me of is, in your own case, did you have any trepidation about putting your professional blackjack career on your profile?
No, not really. I mean, you mean in terms of, like, the feedback or reaction I might have from women I was meeting?
Yeah, when I was single and dating, it was a real killer a lot of times when I told people I was a professional blackjack player. I mean, they basically thought I was a degenerate gambler, and that was pretty much the end of it.
Right. I think the profession of blackjack has gained a lot of mainstream sort of acceptance since that awful movie came out.
Right.
There were a lot
of
awful
movies.
That's like
the one good thing that came out of that movie. 21, was it called?
Yes.
Yeah, 21.
Yeah. You know, that's what finally convinced, like, all my aunts that it was okay or something.
Now, your book, Optimal Cupid, tells of specific do's and don'ts for success on the OkCupid website. How did you come across these rules? Did you, for example, create a number of fake accounts and see how the different responses for different approaches worked, or did you do something else?
No, I did something else. So I all the hard sort of technical information in that book is coming straight out of data mining large sets of OkCupid users, both their profiles and their match questions. So, the first thing I did when I hacked the website was just write software that automated the process of logging on and answering match questions and then going around and recording everyone else's answers to questions. And I did that for about 20,000 single women in Los Angeles. So I got, 20,000 profiles and about 6 million answers to match questions. And then I mined the data for, patterns. And then the more sort of social aspects of dating that I wrote about in the book, came from my personal experience going on 88 dates.
Now, from that data, you broke the women into 5 categories. And how did you come up with the categories? And could you explain the significance of one of your categories was women with 2 or more tattoos?
Right. Well, so what I did was I took all of the – so all of the way that OkCupid works is it – you answer a bunch of multiple choice questions, and they're all over the place, talking about ethics and lifestyle and dating and sex and cohabitation, sports, science, whatever. They're all submitted by users. There's over 200,000 of them on the website. And you answer these questions, and on the basis of your answers, you have what's called a match percentage with any other user, and it's the, website's measure of your compatibility. And the way they compute the percentage is pretty simple. They describe it on their FAQ. I had this thought that probably when people go and answer these questions, their answers don't scatter uniformly across the space, right, the way that they would if, they were flipping coins to choose an answer, right? Most likely the answers tend to cluster around commonly held belief systems, for lack of a better term. And so I ran some unsupervised machine learning algorithms on the data, and those identified, 5 large clusters and 2 smaller clusters just from the data itself. So I wouldn't say that I made the categories. The women in aggregate sort of, created the categories in an emergent fashion.
But there, one of the categories clustered around women with 2 or more tattoos?
Yeah, I mean, that was one high-level statistic that came out of it. But, yeah, I mean, there were women who had, on average, slightly more than 2 tattoos, made $30,000 a year or less, had, on average, I think it was 1.5 jobs, were often, and this is stuff that I found out from meeting them, were often, involved in, a service industry type of job, like maybe a waitress or something, and then had another job that was more artistic, So starving artists would maybe be another high-level characterization.
So now you're an applied mathematician, and you have a lot of sophisticated computer skills and other tools to help you run your OkCupid searches optimally. You've told us about some of those. Now, assuming someone didn't have these skills and tools, could that person successfully use the techniques described in your book and do everything manually?
Yeah. So I wrote the book from the beginning with the idea that I wanted it to be implementable by someone without computer skills, just following the instructions and, clicking on buttons on the website. And so I, prototyped everything I wrote about in there extensively with software, and then, myself just with a mouse and keyboard and some friends as well, all of this stuff in the first chapter is extremely effective. I've had a lot of positive feedback from people who've bought the book and implemented the techniques I described.
So could you describe those techniques? I mean, for somebody who wanted to go out and, do this.
Yeah, we'll limit it now to the first chapter is, controlling your matches. So what techniques would that chapter tell us?
Well, assuming that, let's say, you're a guy, a straight male looking to meet females, then you're doing almost all the messaging on the website and on dating websites in general. Men write almost all of the messages. So it's really incumbent on you to increase your visibility and try and stand out from everyone else. And because of the emphasis put on match percentage, you know, the higher match percentage that you have with people, the more you'll stand out, the easier you'll be to find when they run searches, and the more likely they are to write you back when you write them messages. So everything in Chapter 1 is really geared towards what to do in order to identify a group of people that you'd like to meet in person and how to make your percentages with that group as high as possible.
Right, but you actually turned it around so that the women were coming to you, right? And
that's
and
correct.
How did you do that?
Well, I think it's like a matter of degree. I basically did exactly what I just said. I you know, made my match percentages with a group of women as high as possible. Of course, I used a lot of, like, you know, techniques from machine learning, and I had a supercomputer at my disposal. So I had very strong tools, and I got very good results. You know, after I finished, before I started, I had above a 90% match, which is pretty good. Most users only have one or two, maybe, you know, 50, maybe 100, you know, 90% plus matches, depending on, you know, how big the user base is and the city where they live. LA has a pretty big user base, and so when I started, maybe I had 150. And after I finished, it was over 30,000. So a sizable fraction of the single women online on OkCupid in LA, I was their top match or one of their top matches.
And the way you did that was by selecting specific questions?
So once I'd identified these clusters, so these are groups of women who answer questions very similarly. So it's possible to match very highly with one cluster, but not more than one, you know? Trying to match one kind of by default lowers your match percentage with the others. So I picked one, and then I identified the questions that were most important to them and went through and answered those questions honestly. The way that I selected the questions and weighted them was all determined by, you know, applied mathematics.
And do you have a list of what questions the women find most important?
You mean in each cluster?
Yeah.
I do, yeah, of course. I have all that data.
So how would someone do that? How would someone find that, though, if they don't have access to a supercomputer? So someone using your book, how would they know which questions to go answer?
Right. So I described this technique, which is a version of a very, like, well-known and effective machine learning algorithm called simulated annealing. And it basically does a version of what I did. It's scaled down a lot because, you know, it's implementable by one user, you know, but it basically, you search the space by, you know, selecting a few questions to begin with, answering them in a certain fashion, and then going and using the site's built-in search engine to find your top matches. And then based on the questions that they find important, you answer more, search again, answer more, search again. And that sort of iterative technique starts to orient and position you in this very high-dimensional question space with respect to the people that you're getting matched with, based on the questions that you're answering, and it creates this sort of loop. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah.
Now, we're talking to Christopher McKinley, author of Optimal Cupid. Chris, you went on 88 dates in 3 months. I'm assuming there was some kind of learning curve and you changed strategy as you became more efficient in the OKCupid system. How were your first 20 dates different from your last 20 dates?
The first 20 dates were, I mean, largely disasters, I guess. Not that the people were bad, but I going on one date a day is just exhausting if you are dating in any sort of traditional fashion, you know? So I think that the part of the learning curve was all of my preconceived notions about what a first date should be kind of blowing up in my face and me starting from scratch. And eventually I realized that I really only need about 5 minutes in a room with someone to get a good sense of who they are and whether I'd like to see them again. You know?
It's like auditioning actresses.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I barely need any time at all. I just need, you know, a few minutes. And so I just took the smallest possible acceptable social interaction that I could think of and built, you know, which was like a cup of coffee, and did that.
So you paid for 88 cups of coffee.
I paid for eight. Well, I probably paid for a few more. I bought their cups occasionally.
Did you ever have a second date other than with the girl you ended up engaged to?
I did. I had a couple of second dates, mostly towards the beginning. What ended up happening was when any of these dates was coming up, I usually had about seven or eight lined up after them. So there's very little riding on any one date, you know? I was saying no a lot, and I started to get, I think, a little bit alienated from the process, because one of the odd things that was happening was, you know, these were all women who'd answered anywhere from 300 to, you know, 700-800 match questions in a statistically significantly similar fashion. So there were a lot of other similarities that would kind of creep out. You know, people would order the same drinks. They would ask me the same questions in the same order, you know, with the same relative length of time, drive the same kinds of car, you know, have the same personal affects. So there's a little bit of a Groundhog Day kind of like quality to some of the dates. And that was a little bit alienating. I said no a lot. With some frequency, there'd be people who come along and totally surprise me. In a good way or a bad way. And, you know, oftentimes I go on second dates with them. I should say that, like, the dates themselves were really fun. They were, you know, generally really interesting, intelligent, creative women. There's usually mutual chemistry. I was, you know, really enjoyed meeting them. And I think under other circumstances, I would have been quite happy to date most of them, you know. But the project kind of took on a momentum of its own.
Go ahead.
Did you tell any of the women what you had done other than your fiancé? And what was the reaction if you did?
I told the ones I went on second dates with, I told them. And the reaction was usually pretty positive. There are a few who I think were put off by it. It's the sort of thing that's hard to explain, right, in like a short period of time. So I generally didn't do it on the first date because my goal was really to just get that sense of who they were, not like have this conversation over and over again every single day.
Sure.
The reactions were varied, and the reactions of the story in the Wired article has been varied too. You know, I think people feel some people maybe feel a little violated by the idea of, like, someone taking a whole bunch of data and crunching it and, like, dating in a sort of more informed way. And other people just think it's cool and, you know, interesting and great, you know, no big deal.
If someone wanted your help for a fee in optimizing their OkCupid search, because they want to go on 88 dates, are you available for this, and how would someone get in touch with you?
If someone wants my help that bad, they can figure out how to get in touch with me. I'm not that hard to find. I'm generally not on the market for that kind of help, though.
Okay.
Have your students discovered who you are? And you teach at one of the California universities. Have they discovered this, and do they ask you about it?
Oh, yeah. My class attendance has gone up a fair amount.
And are they more interested in this or your professional blackjack playing?
This, I think, is probably more relevant to them.
Do you play blackjack at all anymore?
Oh, not much. I have so much going on, but you know, I still keep in touch with a lot of people I used to play with.
Using your methodology, where you're going on this many dates, you have to get over rejection rather quickly when you want somebody and they don't want you. Now, many of the people you email on the site might never email you back, or you might go on a date and think it's cool and she doesn't. But somehow you have to get ready for the next one because you have 7 more in the next week. Not everybody can take there's a new bus every 10 minutes kind of approach. Do you have any advice on how to get over this rejection?
I think you have to realize it's not really you, you know. I think it's just a numbers game, and some people you'll click with, and some people you won't, and you never really know what's going on with someone else when you first meet them. You know, I had a lot of dates where people were a little bit funny at first, and then they were like, yeah, I'm still dating my ex-boyfriend. We're living together. I'm confused, you know? you know, and that was one of the reasons, like, I really tried to make the first date as short and efficient, you know, and easy as possible, because who wants to go out for a 4-hour dinner and a movie with someone who's, like, living with their ex-boyfriend?
That's true.
So I think you just, like, kind of keep it light and short and try not to get emotionally involved with someone's profile or, like, someone you meet once, you know? You know, I think if you just kind of take care of yourself emotionally and realize it's like, you need to get in the long run, you know, you'll meet the person if you just keep putting yourself out there.
A lot of people use such superficial things as the size and shape of various body parts to help them choose their perfect mate. Most of us know this is a shallow approach, and yet still succumb to overvaluing blue eyes, blonde hair, and a shapely chest. Does internet dating put a greater or lesser emphasis on this than non-internet dating?
Probably a greater emphasis on it, I would guess. I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, when you create a profile, you really boil yourself down a lot and objectify yourself, you know? And you do it in an empowered way, in the sense that you try and put your best foot forward, you know, in this profile, and you hope that people will react positively to it. But we're also conditioned by, like, what's supposed to be attractive and what we personally find attractive, that I think, you know, women, let's say, for example, consciously put, like, a chest shot up there because they know that, like, guys will react positively to it. And then, you know, if you're a guy, that you start looking for that. And so, I mean, I think that there's a gender dynamic there that gets reinforced by the sort of distillation of ourselves down to just photos and words. But on the other hand, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought.
I was just going to say, but we also have the opportunity to actually, make a sort of considered statement about ourselves in a profile, not just with words, but, with a picture. Maybe it's not, a girl, in a bikini top. Maybe she's, in a sports bra because she's climbing or something, right? I think there are definitely ways to put yourself out there in not just a strictly sexual fashion, but you in context. And I think the more that you're able to do that, the better you'll be able to find people who are interested and who have common interests and aren't necessarily just looking at you as a body.
When I was doing, film and television and auditioning people, often women would come in and look nothing like the picture they had submitted. So of your 88 dates, what was the percentage of, did you run into the same thing? Were the pictures a very bad representation of what they actually looked like?
A little bit. I was able to minimize that somewhat. There's certain kinds of picture, certain angles, certain lightings where that tend to kind of happen over and over again when people are really concealing parts of their physicality, or touching themselves up. And it gets pretty easy to spot, so I just wouldn't respond to messages of people who had really low quality pictures.
With actresses, they show up and they're, 10 or 15 years older than their picture.
Yeah, that happens. I have met a few people, who are a lot older than their pictures. And, that's part of just keeping the first date down to as short and sweet as you possibly can, because if that's really a deal breaker for you, it's the kind of thing you have to find out in person.
Now, your 88th date was with Tien, shortly after which the game was over, and both of you suspended your OkCupid accounts. Now, or perhaps a new game was just beginning, whatever. If you could have written a 1 to 20 list of the most important things you thought you were looking for in a woman prior to starting the OkCupid experience, how would Tien have matched up on that 1 to 20 list?
She would have nailed it. She was really superlative. She was great for me. I didn't make a list like that explicitly, but, I was definitely looking for someone who was very artistic, who was, really intelligent, and also, I think, interested in social activism and advocacy, and most importantly, someone that I just really clicked with, and Tien was all of those things.
Now, long did you guys go out before you got engaged, and how long has that been?
We dated for a little over a year before we got engaged.
Wow.
I
got the impression that this had just happened. That this whole process had just happened. So this was a while ago.
Yeah, it was the summer of 2012, so 2 summers ago.
And are you still engaged, or are you married, or?
Yeah, we got engaged in November, and we're getting married early 2015.
Very good. Now, you were a blackjack player for several years. At blackjack, to keep your welcome, you often have to pretend that you're somebody different than who you really are. Did this background of subterfuge help you in your OkCupid success, or was it irrelevant?
I don't think it was that relevant. In blackjack, like, yeah, I mean, if you're betting the money, right, your number one job is convincing game protection that, like, you belong there. That's a really different kind of game than the one I wanted to play. I mean, I didn't want to, like, convince a whole bunch of women that, like, I belonged in their lives by being something I wasn't. I wanted to be really visible to a lot of women and be myself. So my objective was really to find the kind of women who, like, would find me attractive, you know? I didn't really feel that comfortable, like, being misrepresenting myself in my profile or in the questions I answered. So I didn't do that. You know, and the questions I answered them honestly. I don't think it really had that much to do with it. Although, sure, I guess there's an element of, you know, really putting, like, yourself out there in blackjack that maybe translates. You know, like if you're playing and some suit comes in the pit and you haven't seen him before and he's not a host and it's right around shift change and he's looking at you and he's on the phone now. It's like, what do? You know, maybe you, like, walk over to him and say, hey, are you a host? You know, like, I need a bottle of Dom. My, like, you know, girlfriend's coming over right now. Can you get off the phone, please? Are you talking to room service? Right? Like, you engage them, right? And, you know, that kind of, like, boldness, I guess, helps in dating, too.
So when you were a player, were you a BP or a play caller?
Oh, both. I did all kinds of stuff. I mean, when I BP'd, I always counted my own cards down, you know, but I did both for a long time.
You happened to be a guy looking for a woman who wanted to date guys. Would you guess your techniques would work equally well if you were a woman looking for a man, or a woman looking for a woman, or a man looking for a man? Or do you think you are specific to guys looking for girls?
Oh, no, I think the techniques work very broadly. So the techniques that I describe in the book, I, like, gathered data from men, women, bisexual, straight, and homosexual, and the people that I, like, helped workshop the method with were, you know, of all different genders and persuasions. I think that increasing your visibility is something that you can do on OkCupid, and you can use this book to help you do it regardless of what you're looking for.
Is Amazon.com the best place to get your book, or is there another place that is you recommend?
Yeah, you can find it on Amazon as an ebook, which you can just read in your browser, or you can buy the paperback.
Very good. It's an informative book, and it's a really quick read.
And I have to say, the thing that I really like about this story is the way that thinking like an advantage player moves over into people's everyday lives. I even though I've been married for 21 years, I thoroughly enjoyed it. So,
thank you. Yeah, I mean, blackjack taught me a lot of great life lessons. That's for sure.
Very good, Christopher. Thank you very much for being here. We enjoyed your stay. I'm sure a lot of people are going to pick up OkCupid and
OptimalCupid.
OptimalCupid. I'm almost sorry that I'm engaged. I would like to see how this would work for me, but
you know what, Bob? I have a friend.
Now Bonnie's listening.
A female
to
friend who's single, and this book made me want to sit down with her and see if I could create a thing for her. You know, to see if I could help her.
Very good.
Hack OkCupid. So.
And Bonnie, don't worry. Yeah, I'm not getting any strange ideas.
Right. Now, after the commercials, Bob, I'm going to tell you my favorite OkCupid story that happened to a friend of mine.
All righty.
Okay.
So, Christopher, you can hang out with us, or you can take your leave. But we're either way, we're very happy you were here tonight.
Thanks for having me.
All right. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else has. They will have a series of progressive bonuses in March, each starting at $10,000 and guaranteed to be hit by $25,000. These awards are given to slot and video poker players. Should you be playing when someone else wins the award, you receive $20 in free play. Once a bonus jackpot hits, another one begins immediately. This goes on throughout the day, throughout the month, 24/7. They have a smaller daytime progressive, starting each day at 11 a.m. at 1,000 and guaranteed to be hit by 2,500. If you play during this time period, you're eligible for both bonuses. When this one's hit, the next one will start tomorrow at 11 a.m. Next Thursday through Sunday, they will have hourly virtual racing events at 6:30, 7:30, 8:30, and 9:30. You must have played 100 points in the hour prior to the drawing to be eligible. It's not a drawing, actually, it's a race. At the appointed time, using the iView screen on your machine, you'll be able to pick one of 8 NASCAR drivers who will then compete in a pre-recorded race. Everyone who has chosen the correct driver shares in the $5,000 total prize for that race. In the previous contest, the prizes averaged about $50, and you had a 1 in 8 chance to win, which gave you an EV of $6 per hour. It's a low roller play, but there is a small advantage there. At the Palms, tomorrow night concludes the February drawings, and a slightly new format for the drawings begins in March. The drawings remain at Friday evening, 7 p.m. You do not need to be present to win, but you must claim before midnight. You do need to swipe your card earlier in the day to activate your entries. In March, the Lucky Leprechaun drawings award $7,500 each Friday, and the winners return on Friday, March 28th, for another $10,000 in prizes. You earn 5 times drawing tickets Friday and Saturday evenings from 8 to midnight. The Play, Earn, and Win awards used to be Monday, Wednesday, Friday only. Now they appear to be daily events. From March 3rd to 14th, the major gifts are gift cards, usable at TJ Maxx, Marshalls, or Home Goods. From March 17th to 28th, the prizes are from Tiffany Jewelers. VideoPoker.com remains the best place to practice a wide variety of games, including Quick Quads, Ultimate X, Extra Draw Frenzy Poker, Hyper Bonus, and many others. Often these games are the best returning games in a casino. You need practice to make sure you know how to play. The monthly contest ends tomorrow night. The game is 25 play with Quick Quads. The best game to play in this contest is Atlantic City Joker Wild. Although the return on the game is an abysmal 97.2%, it has the highest variance. This is a contest where dealt hands pay premiums, and this is the best game for that. For their daily contest this week, they have Super Triple Play and Multi-Streak. Super Triple Play is a 6 coins per line game where all quads receive extra, plus the straight flush, and sometimes other pay schedules are bumped up as well. This increases the EV a little and the variance a lot. For example, in 9-6 double-double bonus, the regular EV is 98.98%. The variance is 42. The Super Triple Play version, the EV is 99.11, and the variance is 118. You'll have to work out your own strategy, but with tools such as Video Poker for Winners, among others, this isn't that difficult. Their monthly contest is different than it was before. Now you can play up to 5 100-game rounds a day, and the winners are determined by the total cumulative score for the month. Since today is almost the end of February, it's not real smart to enter this particular contest now, but if this sounds like your cup of tea and you want to play every day, plan on beginning March 1st and see how it goes. Richard, why don't you tell us who our guest is going to be next week?
Our guest next week is Tom Ardle, who is a former blackjack player that 10 years, 15 years ago or so, realized the opportunity that was California banking operations in the card rooms, and went to California and set up a banking operation with Al Francesco and has made millions of dollars doing it. So he'll be our guest next week.
And basically telling us about setting up those banking situations and the pluses and minuses.
Yeah, and the cheating that goes on. And, you know, it's the Wild West in these California card rooms. So he will have all kinds of stories to tell us.
All right. You asked us, ask you about your favorite OKCupid story.
Oh, yeah. So I had never heard of OKCupid until a friend of mine who's single told me his OKCupid story, which was he met a girl on OKCupid, and so he was meeting her at a coffee shop, and he happened to be visiting his mother's house. And so the coffee shop where he was meeting her was fairly close to his mother's house. So he took his bicycle to the date. So he shows up on this first date on a bicycle. And while there, she asks him what he does for a living. And he doesn't want to tell her that he's a professional gambler. So he tells her that he doesn't have a job.
Well, that's an improvement?
The what?
That's an improvement?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, here's this poor girl thinks, here's this guy who lives with his mother, doesn't have a car, shows up on a bicycle, and doesn't have a job. And they've been together for over a year.
How did that happen?
How did you ever get a second date with this woman? You know, but... you know, who knows? Love is blind, and I guess if it was meant to work out, it'll work out.
All right. We got about a minute and a half to go. There was also something in the news this week we didn't talk about before. There was this couple in Maryland who bought $150,000 of chips on the internet for... apparently $12,000, and changed them a little bit and started putting them into the poker game at the Maryland Live Casino. And people started getting suspicious about them. So the couple decided to ditch the chips by throwing them into a lake near their home. And unfortunately, the chips floated. And so they were able to get all the chips and... I thought that was funny, and these people deserve to go to jail for doing what they did. But it was you often say it's only idiots who do these kind of things.
Yeah, they have those Darwin Awards, and it seems like casino scammers this year have maybe the Darwin Awards should have their own casino cheat category for people who come up with these brilliant ideas.
I don't know. We have had a lot of these. Illegal chips or chip things that I don't know if it is they're happening more or they're just coming into the news more.
Yeah, good question. I actually contacted gaming in Nevada and tried to get statistics on the number of gaming arrests they have a year and all. And basically, they will never answer my calls or emails or whatever. So. It'd be great to get stats on those kind of things.
All right. Thank you very much, Richard. Christopher McKinley, thank you very much. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.